when you say ojel, there's a disagreement about whether or not you include trefoil in it.
Right.
But here, that issue doesn't come up because since there's another object of the shvua that's not the ojel, we focus on the wife instead of the ojel.
Why is this Mishnah telling this to me?
Why
does this halacha appear in this Mishnah? What does this... Yes, who can answer it? I can't tell you. Everybody's saying your hands up?
No.
Yes.
Can it just be that we're saying that treif counts as eating?
Yes, we can, if that's what you think it means.
That's what I mean.
Even,
yes.
Like, even
Rabbi Shimon would agree. Let me now say the whole thing. Rachel, what you said before was very important. That this case is not a case where he's taking... Well, first of all, we're talking here about a neder. It happens not to be about a shvuah, but it's a neder. Now, the fact that it's a neder for our purposes is really irrelevant, because the same thing would be true even if he were taking a shvuah on his wife. The important thing is what is he asering in this case?
His wife.
Is he asering himself to eat food or not to eat food? No. So that was Rachel, you said that before and you were right. That's an important piece to realize. So the neder here is whether, if the neder takes effect, it's going to aser his wife on him. So the object of the neder is his wife. Now, the only thing is, he made the neder conditional on something. That's the point. And what is it conditional on? He says that my wife will be also to me if I ate today. Okay. So if he ate today, then his wife will be also to him. And what if he did not eat? I'm just running a few. And if he did not eat today, then his wife will not be also. So the iser of the neder is on his wife. And whether it will take effect or not depends on the stipulation. If the stipulation turns out to have been fulfilled or not. Isn't that true?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the question now is, he did eat today, but what he ate was nevela, just nevela. So this has nothing to do of shavuah, chalal, shavuah. There's no shavuah on eating. The shavuah is not on eating. But in this case, the neder. The neder is not on eating. The neder is on his wife if he happened to have eaten today. So then the issue is, well, what did he eat? The vela. Well, is eating the vela called eating?
Yes.
Yes, it is. So let me hypothetically then, what would you say if he did, if he ate offer, dirt? Then he did not eat today, because dirt is not eating. Putting dirt in your mouth and swallowing it is not eating, because dirt is not edible. And the vela is very edible. It's just also to eat it. And even Rabbi Shimon agrees that eating the vela is called eating. He just feels, in Rabbi Shimon's case, the issue there was a shvuah on top of a shvuah. And even if it's an Iser Kolel, ain't shvuah halal shvuah. Right? That's what we discussed yesterday. Is this clear to everyone?
Mm-hmm.
You see how I just did that? You have to be careful. You think everything through. You know, you have to identify what the object of, in this case, the neder is. He's not ushering food on himself. Is this clear? Okay, let's move on. The next Mishnah, Mishnah A. So, the first half of the Mishnah discusses what? When I say the first half, it means before Rabbi Yishmael. Before you get to Rabbi Yishmael.
Four types of shvuah. What four types of objects of shvuah?
Now be more specific. Tell me what you mean.
So, the first is atzmo. You can be the object of your shvuah.
Yeah.
The second is achirim. Someone else can be the object of your shvuah, like with the wife case.
Well, let's use the examples that the mission is about to give. Don't give me examples yet.
Okay.
And what else?
Something which is mamash, like tangible. Something that's not ain
okay.
mamash.
Okay. So let's get examples. What would be an example of a shvuah that's only about himself?
I'm going to sleep tonight.
Well,
oh, you want it from the Mishnah?
But no, well,
there
that,
is
an
example.
What if I said a Shavua that I'm going to eat today?
Yeah.
So that's about just me.
Yeah.
Doesn't involve anybody else. Give me an example of a Shavua that's Shalachair.
Shatan Li
Shavua. Yeah. Let's say I make a Shavua that I'm going to give a Matana, a gift, to Reuven. So here, this is the Shavua that involves another person. It's not just about me, it's about me tracking down Reuven and giving him a gift. Right. Mm-hmm. So that's, okay, so the Mishnah is saying something which to us probably is would be obvious. We would, I don't know if we would have thought differently, you know, if we did not have the Mishnah. And then, but then the Mishnah says it doesn't matter whether it's Yesh Bo Mamash or Ein Bo Mamash. So I want someone to define for me what is, I'm not asking you to translate the words, but give me a definition of what does it mean, Yesh Bo Mamash, and what does it mean, Ein Bo Mamash?
I thought something, but I'm not 100% convinced, but I can still present the idea.
What's your fear? What's going to happen? The trap door will open underneath you.
If it cools the room, I'm into it. That's fine.
Okay, fine.
I think that if something yesh behind mamash means that there's something after the event that you can prove to that it happened. For example, if I'm to throw a ball across the room, we can then see the ball across the room. Whereas if something she'ein b'chem mamash, that if there's nothing after it, meaning that there's nothing to point to after the event takes place. So if I were to take a nap and then wake up at 3:30, at 3:31, no one knows if I took a nap or not.
Okay, see, the way you're saying it, you might run into problems. So then, if I took a shvua that I'm going to give you a gift. Is that Yesh Bo Mamash or Ein Bo Mamash?
I think it's Yesh Bo Mamash, because if you were to give me a gift afterwards, I am then holding on to the gift.
Well, but you put it in your pocket, nobody can tell that you have it. No.
But there's tangible evidence.
Evidence is only tangible if it's evident.
Right, but the fact of the matter is that
so
I'm still
holding
it.
You have the idea, so instead of saying it, though, I'm just asking you to rephrase it. The idea is good, but just to...
Maybe you could say that it has a tangible effect on the real world, and it doesn't have a tangible effect.
Okay,
it doesn't change something.
Or to say that the action either involves an object, a tangible object, that involves something that's concrete. So, for example, if I say I'm going to give you, let's say, a gift, I'll give you an apple today. So we're talking about an object, the apple. So I don't want to say, and even after I give it to you, we can still see the apple. It doesn't matter. You might take the apple and toss it into the ocean. I don't know what you're going to do with it.
You eat it.
We might eat it and it's gone. Who knows? It doesn't matter what you do with it. So I'd rather not, that's why, Rachel, I'd rather not say it that way.
Okay.
So you're talking about that there's something tangible. So if I give you something, right? So one definition is Yesh Bo Mamash is something that's tangible, and Ein Bo Mamash is something that's simply not tangible. What would be an example of something that's not tangible?
Sleeping.
So, you know, you put your head down, you fall asleep, and then you wake up. Like, there's nothing tangible. There's no object here. There's nothing. You just become unconscious, and you're asleep, and then you wake up. So... But the Mishnah also gives us another type of an example of Ein Bo Mamash. Who knows what I'm referring to?
I thought that was Yesh Bo Mamash.
Sleeping?
Wait, no. I knew sleeping was Ein Bo Mamash.
I'm asking you to give me another example.
Oh, I thought you were saying that the Mishnah is
what
you're
talking about.
What?
Ein Bo Mamash?
Ein Bo, yeah.
Giving someone the gift of friendship.
Why is that Ein Bo Mamash?
It's not tangible. Like,
you gave a gift.
So
No, she meant the gift of friendship. Like the...
Oh, you don't mean
a friendship. Like a friendship.
I'll be your friend. I have the shvua that I'll be your friend.
Yeah.
Okay, so that would be Ein Bo Mamash. Okay. But what about something from the Mishnah?
I thought the other two examples were for other things.
Okay, what I'm asking about is Ezro Tzror Liyam Ushalo Ezro.
That's what I thought was a Mamash.
Yeah.
Well, Shalom Ezro is kind of not Mamash, because it doesn't actually involve anything when it comes down to it.
Before Shema, the Mishnah, you have to have
bring her on again.
I have not downloaded the app. So.
Well, then, what did you use for the Mishnah then? How did you learn it?
Well, yes,
Hati doesn't say anything on that.
Yes, he does.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, he does.
I don't see it if he does.
Okay, you see the ones of Shizarakti, Vishalozarakti?
Yeah.
Avzu Shvu Asbitui, Bedover She'en Bo Mamash. You have it?
Yeah, I have it. Sorry.
So
I was looking at
She'ezra. Well, okay, so you keep looking.
Okay.
So what is he saying? No, was he throwing a rock into the ocean? Now, to me, I would have thought that's Yeshma Mamash, no?
Yeah.
What's the difference if I pick up a rock and I throw it in the ocean, or I pick up a gift and I throw it to you because I want to give it to you?
No, I had the gift, the rock, and it disappears. You can never tell the effects of the rock.
A thousand people watched me throw the rock into the ocean.
A thousand people watched you take a nap.
Good. So then it has nothing to do with whether it's known or not known.
I think it has to be.
So what defines it as Yeshba Mamash?
Well, when you throw something into a river,
I think it has to be.
Look at what.
You
go ahead.
Like, there's no loss and there's no gain by you throwing a rock
into
a river.
In other words, throwing a rock into. We're assuming that this is not, you know. That this is totally. Your action is totally, totally inconsequential. If you look at the Kahati, that's what he says. There's no toelis, there's no purpose to it, there's nothing. So Enbo Mamash could also mean that too. Right? So we have two different definitions to me of Enbo Mamash. Either there's no object, there's nothing tangible, or what if it's just totally a useless, wasted activity? Right, that is just totally inconsequential. Okay, what?
I'm just a little confused as to why that would be an inconsequential.
We're assuming that you're just passing. It's nothing. You're just standing there by the ocean and you toss something in.
But then, in theory, you could say that any physical action that you do.
No, you can't say that for every single physical.
Let's say I move this chair 2 inches.
Okay, so maybe that's also in Bob Mamash. Who says it's not?
Okay.
Okay, you have to evaluate each thing. Next, then, we talked about this a little bit. Then we have Rabbi Shmuel's opinion, who said what?
You're only
hired. But you're only hired for what?
Ashua, that you make of something you're going to do.
So, Lahaba.
Yeah.
You're only chayav for Shmuel Lahabba, but not L'sha'avar. And why did Rabbi Shmuel say that?
It's
because of the pasuk what?
Lahara
Lahaiti. So what did Rabbi Akiva then say back to him? So that we didn't discuss at all. What did Rabbi Akiva say back?
If I remember, he said back to him.
If you remember, how long ago did you learn this?
Okay, 2 years. No, I don't. If we understood it, he said back to him that if you were, how did you learn your way, Rabbi Shmuel? You made a riboy on the pasuk. So,
what are you talking about?
Okay.
What riboy?
My riboy pasuk.
Yeah. What's that referring to?
To him saying how he knows that the pasuk.
In Laurel, I hate to.
Is
No.
Okay.
Okay, yes.
Doesn't he first ask a question and say, if you're going to read Lahara Lahaiti so literally, then it would also seem to exclude the possibility of making shvuot on things that are neither good nor bad? Isn't
yeah.
that the first question?
Yes. So let's rephrase that. Rabbi Akiva said to Rabbi Shmuel, according to you then, that you're so medaktik on the words Lahara Lahaiti, how do you know, says Rabbi Akiva to Rabbi Shmuel, how do you know that what if you make a shvua to do or not do something that's neither good nor bad? What about it to do or not to do something that is just totally neutral and you can't, define it as something good versus something bad? Let's say, for example, we've said that eating versus not eating is good versus bad, assuming that eating is always a good thing and not eating is always a bad thing. What about, I don't know, I take a shavua to lift up this sefer and put it down. I don't know, is that good, bad? It's neither, it's just something neutral. Nothing good or bad about it. So Rabbi Akiva says to Rabbi Shmuel, so how do you know that if I took a shavua to pick up a book and to put it down, that the shavua is chal? So what did Rabbi Shmuel answer him? Did he answer him?
Yeah.
Yeah, what did he answer him? Yeah, what does that mean?
Is it Dorish the Pasuk?
What, yeah, where, what? What Pasuk is he doing?
The Harao Lehitir.
So what, is, are there words of the Pasuk that
he... Shakol?
It continues afterwards, yeah.
It's the words that follow. You've got to be more careful. What does the... I want you to know the Pasuk by heart. What's the Pasuk?
I don't know.
Okay. Nefesh kisi shaval levate bisfasayim. What comes after that?
V'chol asher
yivat ve'ha'adam v'shvua. Isn't that true? I think we even made a point of it when we went through the psukim, that that seems to be redundant. Right? Which words are seem to be repetitive? V'chol asher yivat ve'ha'adam. I mean, it already said, nefesh kisi shaval levate bisfasayim. I have to then say again, v'chol asher yivat ve'ha'adam v'shvua. So that's what Rabbi Shmuel answered Rabbi Akiva. How do I know, you asked me, how do I know things that are neither good nor bad? So Rabbi Shmuel answered, well, that I would learn out from the Ribui HaKasuf, from the phrase, L'chol Asher Yivat Ha'adam V'Shvua. Okay, very nice. So then what did Rabbi Akiva then say right back to him?
But if there's a...
Yeah, what? Anna, yes?
But if there's... If there's a case for a ribui, why can't it include things in the past?
Exactly. So you, Rabbi Yishmael, are acknowledging that there is something, there is a ribui that you can learn out other things. But other things that Rabbi Yishmael acknowledged, like things that are neutral, neither good or bad. So Rabbi Akiva says, well, I use that ribui also to teach me the past. Okay, we got it. Okay, that's that. Next. Okay, Mishnah Vav is more complicated. What's Mishnah Vav about?
If you take an oath against or to establish a mitzvah.
Okay, let's do one at a time.
So.
Nishba levato is a mitzvah. This is very interesting. A person takes a shavua to be levatel a mitzvah. Let's say, for example, the Torah says, do not eat nevela. Right? The Torah says, he takes a shavua, shavua sha'ochal nevela. So he's taking a shavua to do something that is directly asur by the Torah. Torah says, don't eat nevela, and he's now taking the shavua to eat nevela. And then what happened? Did he eat the nevela or not?
He stayed kosher.
He did not eat the nevela. Okay, that's very nice. He didn't eat nevela. The question, though, is, did he just violate the shavua? He took a shavua and didn't eat nevela. Did he violate the Shavua? So what does the Mishnah say? No, Pater. Let's just, okay. So the first thing is to figure out why you're Pater. Why are you Pater? Of course, our instincts tell us. Torah says, don't eat the base, take a Shavua. Okay, so he's a bad boy. He's taking a Shavua to eat the Vela, but he took a Shavua. He still took a Shavua. He swears that he will eat the Vela today. So let's assume, let's say it's all lahachas. Okay, so he's lahachas. It's very nice, but not nice, but so it's very bad, but the point is he still took a shavua. So what argument could you give as to why he's putter? Yeah.
Well, he's putter because it's not a shavua bitoy.
But why not?
Because It's a shvur shav because.
But why? Why isn't it bitui?
Okay.
But why isn't it a shvur? That's what we're asking. Why shouldn't it be a shvur bitui? And remember, what's the penalty? The korban.
Korban and
not. Well, if you did it b'mezid, but if you did it b'shoging, it's right. A korban. So it's. So we're saying, no, you're putter from a korban. Now it turns out as. That it will be treated as a shvuas shav, so you could then be subject to malchus. But the Mishnah is not focusing on. So what? When the Mishnah said potter, what are you potter from?
The korban.
The korban, because you're potter from the punishment for a shvuas bitoy, because it does not qualify as a bitoy shvuas bitoy. The question is, why not?
Is it ein shvua kalal shvua?
Is that, would this be an illustration of that? Tell me what ein shvua chal shvua means.
You can't make a shvua on something you've already made a shvua on.
Well, would this be an illustration of that principle?
Well, if you've already taken a shvua not to...
Let me back up a second. Why can't you take a shvua on a shvua?
Because it would be like a repetition.
It would be what?
It would be a useless repetition. Oh, it's not that. It's
not that. There's no repetition here. The principle of Ein Shvua Chal Shvua doesn't apply here. Ein Shvua Chal Shvua means if you make a Shvua which is repeating what you've already taken a Shvua on previously.
It's like Mishnah 10.
Before you go on, do you see that?
Yeah.
You all realize that the principle of Ein Shvua Chal Shvua doesn't apply here. Ein Shvua Chal Shvua means once it's already Aser, you can't then add on another issur of your own. That's trying to add on an issur, which means you're affirming what the Torah asked, and now you want to make a shvua to asur the very same thing. So then, one issur cannot fall on top of another one. But that's not what's happening here. You're making a shvua to go against what the Torah said.
That's ridiculous. It's a ridiculous statement.
Why? What's ridiculous about it? He's not a firm man.
Not a firm
person.
He wouldn't be.
He's
not from anywhere.
Then he's taking. Maybe he's doing a lahachas. Why is it ridiculous?
I don't know.
You could say it's. You feel sorry for the guy that he feels this way, but he still took a shvua. Now, Kahati, I don't know if you saw it quoted from the Rambam in his Perush HaMishnayos. So, how did you do this? So like, when you saw this.
I think
we looked at the
bottom. Well, not to guess, but like this is what he says about like, right? We're all like obligated from the Torah to keep these various laws, right?
Okay.
And then you're going to take a shvua to say the opposite.
You give me an emotional argument.
No.
That's exactly what he wants to do. He wants to take a shvua to fight because he hates the Torah.
But he took a shvua.
He's angry at the Torah right now. He's taking a shvua, but he wants to keep the veil.
He took a shvua.
I don't care why he's taking a shvua. I mean.
Okay, so why is it no good?
It's like a logical argument. You can't say I'm both going to do A and I'm both going to do B.
No, I'm not going to do
A. I mean, do A and do the negation.
I'm not doing A.
But you've already taken a shvuah because we were given the Torah Har Sinai and we've taken a shvuah upon ourselves to fulfill
the mitzvah. Okay, so I'm violating that shvuah now. I want to violate it. I want to take a shvuah to violate an earlier shvuah.
But we learn later on that we can't do that.
I'm asking why.
Why in Mishnah Tet? Is that there?
Same thing. Why can't I do it? What is it so?
It's just like a logical incoherence.
What's logical about it?
You can't replace good with bad and bad with good.
I can't hear you.
You can't replace good with bad and bad with good.
Okay, well, see, that's where Kahati quotes from. Can you explain to me what you mean by that? The thing is, though, I was going over this in the other class, and the people were raising it. I don't know if it works so well. That's why I have another way of explaining it. Okay, could you tell me, though, what you have in mind? Before you do that, just once the rest of you, if you didn't use a Kahati, what did you use?
Bartanura.
What did the Bartanura say?
He says
could you read it to me if you had?
Yeah, he says Aval Loka Hu Mishim Shua Chav.
That's all he said.
Yeah.
You didn't say anything while you're putter? Oh, okay. Not a word, nothing really.
I don't see it.
Maybe on Mishnah Tet he might have explained, but I didn't.
Okay. Okay, what can I say?
He has on further parts of the Mishnah.
That's what you
meaning mean. He discusses further on in the Mishnah, not about Patur, but on this part he doesn't discuss.
Just
right.
Does he explain any more? Are you for Nishba Levata, why you're Patur? Okay, fine. So, okay, Sarah Sahaba telling us what you.
I'm not sure I entirely get it, but it's got something to do with, like, is it differentiating between Divrei Rashi and Divrei, like, what you're commanded in? So, like, potentially, like, things in your Rashi you can make distinctions for, but, like, what you're commanded in, you can't replace, no?
Yeah.
You can't replace good with bad and bad with good, like, it's set.
Et cetera.
No,
he mentioned Bartimaeus.
You can always watch the game.
Yeah.
All he says later on,
yeah,
in the Mishnah,
yeah,
on that he says like for Shayab, it didn't, on the part that says Shayab, it didn't she Yechayev Kedivrei Rabbi Yehuda Ben Basera.
Yeah.
There he says Klomar Sheilu Ledivrei Rabbi Yehuda Ben Batera Hu Chayev Mishum Shuat Bitori.
Yeah, well, that's just referring to Rabbi Yehuda.
I mean, he does say later, "Demashma davar sheyesh bo hen v'lar."
Oh, okay.
But it's so vague. I honestly
okay.
don't understand.
So what? The basis for this is that it goes back to the pasuk itself. Remember, the pasuk says, "Nefesh kisi shoval levate b'sfasayim lahara o lahetiv." That the Torah is describing a situation where a person is going to take a shavua, either lahara or lahetiv, where he has the option in front of him, either lahara or lahetiv, to do something that the Torah recognizes as bad, and something that the Torah recognizes as good, and what? But the Torah does not prohibit either one, that you have the option to choose either one in your shvuah. Because the Torah itself is telling us what? That the only thing that every shvuah has to, a shvuah bitui has to pass what test? That it has to have the option where a person is totally free. Lahara olahetiv. That the Torah itself does not say anything about it, and that he has the option to do either one. So that would only be true for what types of situation cases?
I'm so sorry. I'm like, maybe I'm the only one, but I'm missing the logic.
I didn't get to it yet. I'm in the middle. Let me try that. So what for what types of cases would this be referring to?
Like, if I take a shua, then I'm going to, like, give my friend a gift.
I know, but that's, you give me a specific example.
Rishus.
In other words, the Torah is telling you that if a person is about to take a shua, whether it's lahar or lahetiv, like, it doesn't matter. Because he could do something, he's allowed to do something for bad, or he's allowed to do something for good, and he chooses one over the other. For example, like we pointed out, that something good would be like eating. Eating is a good thing. Fasting is a bad thing. Now, today, the Torah says nothing about whether I have to eat today, or I'm allowed to fast today, or I'm supposed to fast today. Right? Today, Wednesday, I can do whatever I want. The Torah says nothing about it. So then I have the option today to say, I take a shavua that I will eat today, or I can take a shavua that I will fast today. Isn't that true? Because the Torah says nothing. Those are the kinds of cases that the shavua will take effect upon. But what if you want to take a shavua on something that what?
And already told us.
Where you don't have, within the context of the Torah itself, you don't have that option. So, for example, to take a shavua that what?
I'll eat neveh.
That I will eat neveh today. Well, according to the Torah, you're not allowed to eat neveh. So therefore, to make a shvua that I will eat the vela is putter, because you don't have that permission, according to the Torah itself, to eat the vela. It's not something optional that you could say I will or I won't. Okay. Now, the part, I don't know, if you look over the Bar Tanura, if not everybody has, it's actually from the Rambam's Perish HaMishnah. It's another Rambam wrote a Perish for the Mishnah. I want you all to look, it's in the back of the Gemaras. Right, where you have, where they put in the Rambam's Perish HaMishnah, it's after the Rush, you have to turn slowly. Right? Well, why not just all take a look? Maybe we should just do it together. Okay. Let's see how he says it. You have it?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm gonna need a magnifying glass,
but
yes.
Cool. I need a magnifying glass. My magnifying glass is to take off my glasses so I can see. Okay.
I am really impressed.
Okay. You all have it? You have to find Barak Gimel, Barak Shlishi, and find the Mishnah.
Yeah.
Why should, well, not everybody has it yet?
Well, I'm not. It's
I may have
right.
Left.
It's right after the first rush, which is the rush.
It's
only
a page and a half. Look at this. This is all I have.
It's the last.
So you could, like, have passed by.
Yeah, it's right. It's over here. Okay.
Everybody has it.
Yeah,
sorry, you have
you.
It.
I think so.
You're not sure?
No, I have it. Yeah, it's after the rush.
With mine, it
which
is
one you have?
Mine also is after Hirosh, after Piskei Hirosh.
Oh, you have, but I don't know where it is
also,
there.
No.
Where
is it?
I think it says Rambam. I think we're good.
Okay.
So.
What? It starts Omar Rahmana.
Which one
are you doing? Well, you need to find the Mishnah.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'll give you all a couple of minutes, look at it, and then we'll discuss it. Anyone? It's a little hard. hard to remember. The Rambam wrote this in Arabic and was translated into Hebrew, so this is not the Rambam. So we're reading a translation. Who wants to try?
Okay. So the pasuk says la'ra'u lehitiv. So omnam hu machayev b'shvua al devar she'iafshar bo she'yitiv b'makom lahara or yara b'makom lehitiv. So
three more words.
Behem divrei harishut.
Yeah, what does he mean by this? What do you think this means?
I think he's saying things that you don't have the option of doing bad or in place of good, or doing good in place of bad, as in when it's an aveira or when it's a mitzvah, positive or negative mitzvot.
Let's say again.
So sometimes the Torah says do something, and so then you can't not do it. And sometimes the Torah says don't do something, so then you can't.
He says v'hem divrei rishus. Are you interpreting
well,
the first
he
part?
He said the word
Emnam. Yeah, but he was Iyaf Shah Bo Shiyitev Makom Lara. Oh, right, yeah.
Doesn't Emnam mean he's just suggesting a possibility?
Emnam means however.
Oh.
Let's read a little bit more.
Oh, he's already Chayev in the Shvua from Hashem to do the mitzvot and the
Is he discussing what he just said about Shvua? Al dover she'i efshar bo she'yetiv b'mokom lahara o yera b'mokom lahetiv. Because then he says v'hein divrei harishus. So what he just said, he's talking about not mitzvahs, he's talking about optional things. And he's describing, I'm just going over his words, I haven't explained it yet. And he's describing that when it comes to optional things, and I'll plug in his words, then it's a dover, she'yev shabo she'yetiv b'mokom lahara, o yera b'mokom lahetiv. What is he talking about? Okay, so actually Kahati, if you look at, quotes this Rambam, the Perashat Mishnayos, and he tries to explain it. And what he says it means is that when it comes to a Dover Rishus, if you decide to take a Shavua on doing something good, right, then there's no bad in it. What do I mean? Let's say I take a shavua to eat, assuming that eating is a purely healthy thing, there's no downside, assuming eating healthy foods, there's no downside to the eating. So if I take a shavua to eat, I'm taking a shavua to do something good. Is there any bad in that? No, there's no bad. Or if I take a shavua to fast, assuming fasting is a bad thing, it's not healthy, it's not good for the body, da da da. So then, there's nothing good in it. Isn't that true? Just follow the thought. So that means you're talking about in the Dover Rishus, if I decide to take a Shavua to do something that we assume is bad, then there's no good that will come from it. So that's what it means, he says. That it's impossible to do anything good in a situation where it's bad. So, for example, if you took a shvuah to fast, there's no good in that.
Nothing good's going to come out of it.
Yeah, there's nothing good. There's no silver lining in this that you can say it's good, right? Let's follow the thought. Okay.
I just want to slightly retranslate, because good and bad is like confusing me with moral. Can you say positive and negative, like a positive
fine
action or a negative
so
action?
Well, lahara means, so you want to So then you want to rephrase lahara la'aytav as positive and negative.
Yeah,
okay,
so that
fine.
I will do something or I won't do something. It's
well,
a positive
sometimes
action or
the
a negative
doing
action.
Might be the negative and the not doing might be the positive.
Right,
so
like I'll go out and I'll kill a fish today. I don't
oh, that
say
would be
that
ra. That wouldn't be
an
yes.
That,
so that's
yeah.
why I'm saying, so.
I see. Yeah.
I'm recording.
What's he getting at now? What he's getting at is the following. If he took a shvua, levata l'samitzva, just pick an example. He took a shvua that he's going to eat nevela. Now, based on the definition that he just gave, eating nevela should be viewed as something, in terms of the definition of a shvua, eating the vela should be viewed as something good. Because he's saying, I'm going to eat. Now, if he then decides to do what? If he decides what?
To eat the vela or to not eat the vela.
So that if he decides to eat the nevela,
then he's both done good.
He's also
bad
done bad. What's
Whoa.
The bad? Because the Torah says don't eat nevela.
So it's too negative.
No, it's not
good.
Too negative.
It's a
negative and
good.
Positive at the
it,
same time.
Yeah.
You can't have that same consequence in the same moment.
Exactly.
You can't both fulfill the shvua in a positive, like because it's a positive shvua.
That
right?
says lahara olehetiv.
Oh.
And to fulfill the commandment
it's
not to eat
it's
shvua.
Either all good or all bad. But if it's a nishba levata or some mitzvah, then it's a mix of good and bad. Is that what I mean by it's a mix? Sorry, here.
Yeah.
It's a mix of good and bad. Because, as I think it's what. In this thing was if the battery totally drains,
it'll never restart.
You can't recharge it.
I don't think it'll totally drain that quickly though. Like I think you would probably.
I'm
sure.
I think I do. Okay. What was I saying? So in the case of what? In the case of. If it's nishma levata las a mitzvah, so I took a shvut to eat nevela, so which you would think is a good thing, because eating is a good thing, but at the same time, if I eat the nevela, I'm doing a bad thing, because the Torah prohibits eating nevela. So therefore, good and bad is a blur, that the lines between good and bad are blurred.
Within the same shvut.
Yeah. So that's why, this is what this the Rambam seems to be saying, that's why the nishma levata las a mitzvah is pata, because shvuah speaking only applies where if you make a shvuah to do something good, there's no bad in it. If you make a shvuah to do bad, there's no good in it. Yeah.
I'm still confused about the good and the bad. In the case when you make a shvuah to eat treif, then it
is a good thing.
Right, but is it? Okay, so eating is defined as a good thing in some world. It's not that keeping your shvua is the positive
no.
act. Okay.
Alright, because eating is a good thing. It's healthy.
It's interesting.
Keep your health.
So I understand the conclusion, but I'm having the same issue that Hannah is that, like, how can we define every action as either good or bad? Like, does every action fit into a category? Like, oh, I'm going to take a walk today. So walking is healthy.
Well, that's what we saw. So maybe you're taking a walk, maybe it's a good thing.
But it's 97 degrees outside, so it's
so
not
a
good
thing.
So how can you define eating as always inherently good? Like, let's say I have diabetes.
Okay, so I'm assuming that we're in a situation where the eating is good.
Okay.
You're raising an issue where, what if a doctor told me, don't eat today, otherwise you'll die. Of course, eating would be a bad thing.
Okay, so it's not that it's like that each action is always defined as good or bad. It's like a situational.
Okay, so there's a subjectivity to it.
Okay, that's fine to say. I thought it was like a...
Yeah, but now I'm really confused, because if you're saying there's a subjectivity to the eating, then surely this example where you're saying I'm going to eat Nivela is obviously bad. Obviously
no,
eating Nivela
good.
Is bad.
There's a lot of good things in it. It's healthy. You won't die from starvation. You won't get sick physically, let's assume.
You're iron deficient and you're on an island with no other food.
You'll have all the nutrients that you need, all the vitamins that you need. You'll be able to go another day. At the same
time,
you're violating the Torah. So calling something eating as a good thing is still a good thing.
So it could even work with the opposite, where the action itself is perhaps bad in a certain context, but doing it will fulfill a mitzvah.
Okay.
Right? Like, let's say, because we used this the other day, eating matzah on Pesach, the only matzah that's available is wheat, and someone has celiac. So in that case, if they took a shvuah to eat the matzah, it'd be good in the sense that they'd be fulfilling.
Well, you can't take a shvuah to eat the matzah because you are in your commandment.
Well, but we didn't talk about that yet.
You can't pretend you don't know the shrines.
But we're just talking about now something that's also that's forbidden. So we're saying that it wouldn't work in the other direction.
So then that's the thing now. We'll work it all better. I'm talking about Levato. Let's take...
So on Levato.
Let's say Levato. Let's say I take a shavua...
That I'm not going
to
touch plants.
Not to eat matzah at the Seder.
Then you eat matzah.
So then...
But not eating is bad.
Assuming that not eating is bad...
Then it's not a mixture.
So then, if I end up not eating the matzah, that's
not
also
a mixture because
eating
matzah
is
a
positive commandment,
but not eating is bad.
But taking a shavua not to eat the matzah is.
That. Unless you were told by your doctor to eat matzah. Unless you were taught. No,
right,
unless you were told.
No,
but
I mean, why is it all bad?
Unless you were told by your doctor you need to eat matzah to get better, and you took a. We're making up the case.
No,
maybe we're extending Rambam's logic.
So that's the thing. I don't see how it works.
No, I agree with
that. Exactly. It doesn't work. There's a problem with the logic.
If you were to take a shavua not to eat the matzah, and then you eat the matzah. Right.
Okay, so then you buy it. So the question is, but the shvua that you took not to eat matzah. Look at the other example. I took a shvua to eat nevela. So there I see it. Because eating per se is a good thing, but eating nevela is also a bad thing. So you have to take a shvua not to eat matzah. So that's not eating the food is bad, and not eating matzah is also bad.
No.
But what
you
no.
See, you're framing it negative. Not eating is bad, but eating matzah is good.
Oh, but look at your shavua, though. We always look at what your shavua
is. The
shavua
is not to eat the matzah.
The kati brings not eating chametz on Pesach. So not eating is bad, but not eating chametz is good.
I know. That's what, so there I see it, but the question is not eating, but if I took a shavua not to eat matzah.
And then what if you're celiac and the only matzah available is wheat? So then in that case, the act of achila would be dangerous for you, so it's bad. But not eating matzah on Pesach.
It sounds like we have to look at one of the commentators on this.
This is
like
one
commentator.
I know.
So we will continue tomorrow.
That's why I think that you have to see...